Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yud Aleph. And you know, I've decided that I'm going to wait one more day till we finish Yud Aleph to do that review, because basically that will conclude the portion, the first part of the perek, which is about Bedikas Chametz, and then we'll move on to Biur Chametz on the next day. So it makes more sense to me, I think, just worked out very well. So I did send you the PDF, if you take a look in your DAF, and you can look that over. I think that it's extremely useful to get the overall sense of what's been going on over here, and then we'll review it together, Bezrat Hashem. So we're holding today at the Halakha Mishnah, actually, on DAF Yud Amud Beis, and we've been talking about the Zman of the Bedika, of course, as being the night of the 14th. But as we're going to see, there is also alternative dates for someone who misses the first dates. And it's not so clear when those alternatives are, because is it a good idea to be bodeg during Yontiv? Is there a chashash that if you're bodeg during Yontiv, you may end up being over on the Isser and eat it while you're being bodeg for it? Is there a need to be bodeg after Yontiv in order to avoid the problem of chometer over a lava pesach? So these are some of the issues that are going to be discussed in the Mishnah. And our first take on the Mishnah is that actually Rabbi Yehuda holds that there are separate bedikas that you need to make. It's not enough to do just one bedika. We're going to see that in reality, what Rabbi Yehuda was talking about were alternative times for someone who missed the time. But let's read the Mishnah according to our initial take. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bodkin Or Arba Asar, which of course is the first Mishnah, and also Arba Asar Shacharit, and also at the time of the Biur itself, when we need to get rid of the chometz. So that means it seems to be saying he needs three separate bedikas. The Chachamim Omrim, and here's what's actually very misleading to us, is that the Chachamim say it's not like that. It's that if lo badak or arba asar, then yivdok b'arba asar. Lo badak b'arba asar, then yivdok b'tok ha-mo'ed. Lo bedak batoch ha-mo'ed, then yivdok li'achra ha-mo'ed. Now, what exactly does mo'ed mean? I mean, there's one thing that's very clear here in the Mishnah, at least seems to be, and that is that the Rabbanan claim that these are only in the event that you missed. Then go to number two. In the event you missed number two, go to number three. But there's also obviously another difference, because Rabbi Yehuda said b'sha'ata biur, and the Chachomim say, la'achar ha-mo'ed, or betoch ha-mo'ed. Now, what exactly does that mean? On the simple reading of it, it means during Yontiv. So if you weren't bodek at night, you can be bodek all day long on the 14th. If you weren't bodek on the 14th, then you can be bodek during Yontiv. And if you weren't bodek during Yontiv, you still need to be bodek after Yontiv. So, okay, first of all, they're talking about alternatives, and furthermore, they're talking about four alternatives, not three, because they've got Yud Dalet, that's the Or Yud Dalet, Yontiv, and after Yontiv. That's what it seems to be saying. Now, Rashi understands that the meaning of the Chachamim is not the way we just said it, which is the way almost all the Rishonim learn, but rather, B'toch HaMo'ed means, according to the Rabbanan, B'sha'at HaBiur, which is strange, because, of course, Rabbi Yehuda also said that, except that he called it B'shat HaBiur. Li'achar HaMo'ed means until the night, meaning after the Biur, but only up until the night. But you cannot be bodek later than that, because we're afraid that maybe you'll come to eat it. Okay, so all of that we need to see. What would be the difference, therefore, according to Chachamim, before the Mo'ed, that is to say, up until the seventh hour, and after the Mo'ed, which is to say, only up until Yontiv, there the difference is obvious. There's no Isra Vachila, Midi Araisa, before that. But what would be the difference, according to the Chachamim, between after the Mo'ed and any later than that, meaning on Yontiv Gufa? Why would Rashi say that the Chachamim were only allowing us to do the Bedika after the seventh hour, but only up to the nighttime? And there we'll have to say that the difference is that since the Isser Karet on the Chametz only kicks in at night, the Chachamim were only machmir where there is an iser karet, but where there is an iser of achila, even if that iser is deraisa la'acha sheva, shah shivi'it, nonetheless, the Rabbanan didn't aser because of the gezeira about maybe you'll eat it. So we have two very different Mishnayos over here, whether we're going Aliba to Rashi or we're going Aliba most other Rishonim. Now, what's the halacha, as we saw before? After you do your bedika on the nighttime, if you want to continue to eat something later that night or the next morning before the Shas Isser, Masha Mishayer Yanichena B'tzina'ah, make sure that it's in a secure location in order that we don't get into our mice issues and rat issues. Okay, taking Rabbi Yehuda to mean what we thought he meant, namely, that there are three separate times for the Badika, not alternative times. Where would that come from? My time of the Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Chista and Rabbi Bar Avuna d'Amri Tavayu, it's keneged shalosh hashbatot shebetorah. Lo yera elacha chametz, lo yera elacha se'or, A. Shivat yamim se'or lo yimatze bevatechem, B. Ach b'yom harishon tashbitu se'or mi batechem, C. Now this is a totally new way of looking at things, and even though we don't stick with our pshat, that there really are three times, nonetheless the insight from the Gemara is very powerful. Because what the Gemara is saying is that as opposed to what we would have taken for granted, that the difference between the lo ta'aseh of ba'yira'eh, the lo ta'aseh of ba'yimatseh, versus the mitzvah's essay of tashbizu, is that they're talking about completely different things. One is getting rid of chametz. Well, maybe that's something to do with making sure that you don't end up using the chametz. I don't know. But the Gemara sees that the three are clearly interrelated. And that means that they're all types of tashbitus. Why is that? Only because of the way that we understood and the way the Rambam presented the issue at the beginning. Namely, the Torah is asking us to inhabit a chametz-free space. And therefore, the tashbitu and the lo yera'eh and the lo yimatzeh is all part of creating that space. That's the important point. So in a sense, it's all active, even though it's in terms of a lotus, because we're being asked to make something, create something. And that is why it's so central to understanding the tashbitu in terms of our mind. It is an awareness issue. It's a spatial issue. In the end, we don't stick with that being three separate zmanim, but there's no change in our understanding of the interrelationships of the psukim. Mosif Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, I think we don't understand Rav Yehuda correctly. Because if you take a look at the bright that says, Rav Yehuda Omer, kol shelo badak b'shlosha prokim halalu, shuv eino bodek. If you didn't check these three times, don't do any more bedikas. I mean, if that's all he's got to say, then he seems to be pinpointing the machlokas. Alma b'mikan v'elechu depligi. I mean, he seems to be only arguing about the question of whether we would go beyond the Sha'a Hashishit into the time of the Isra of the Chometz. That's the Machlokas, not about whether you need to do it three times or alternative times. Marzutra said it this way, and Mosiv Reb Yosef, for this version, he says it even more clearly, that Reb Yehuda actually says the words, kol shelo badak be'echad mishlosha prokim alalo, if you didn't use one of these alternatives, in which case we don't need to guess from the fact that Rav Yehuda said only the question is when to do it and when not to do it, but he said openly, obviously I'm not telling you three separate times, but if you didn't make use of one of these alternative times, do not do a bedika later. That's what we're arguing about. I don't want you to do a bedika later because you are liable to get into trouble if you do the bedika later. That's the point. So it's davka, shuv eino bodek, ama b'shuv eino bodek, who to plig it. There's no real difference between these two questions, these two attacks on the way that we understood Rabbi Yehuda, other than one is very, very clear. It's open that Rabbi Yehuda actually says the words, be'echad mi hazmani malalu. Okay. Of course, that leaves open the question of why did the Chachomim say the words lo badak, then, ivdok? I mean, Why didn't Reb Yehuda, if Reb Yehuda agrees with that, then what was the point of making this distinction? Kosher lo badak be'echad mishlosha. I mean, it boils down to the same thing. Lo badak be'e, yivdok be'b. Lo badak be'b, yivdok be'c. So, like, why was the Mishnah so misleading? Well, there's one simple explanation for that. But it doesn't work out very well according to Rashi. And that simple explanation is that the Chachomim are not giving you alternative times for Bedikas Chometz in the normal sense of Bedikas Chometz. Because if they were, they wouldn't be talking about doing a Bedikas Chometz after Yontif. We'd laugh them out of town, right? So they can't say, if you didn't take Zman 1, take Zman 2, take Zman 3. This is a new Chiyuv. So this business of getting rid of Chometz after Yontif to avoid the problem of Chometz Sha'avar Alav HaPesach, my God, that introduces a completely new issue. You couldn't say the words, and if you didn't, then do it then. That would explain why, Alibid Rabbi Yehuda, we would never use that kind of language. Why should I? I'm just telling you the times, the maximum times that you could be bodek. The latest time that you could be bodek. Okay. Anyway, so now let us get back to what the machlokas is. So, So obviously, Reb Yehuda holds, once the chometz becomes aser b'achila, you're not allowed to do bedikah. Why not? The rabbanon said, we're worried you're going to end up eating it. Rabbanon said, we do not make a gezerah. Maybe you will come to eat it. Now, right now, we take this at its surface meaning. Reb Yehuda is more concerned about the possibilities that you'll pop something into your mouth. The rabbanon are less concerned. Asks the Gemara, that doesn't add up in other locations. Look, we've got another place where we got to worry that you're going to pop something into your mouth. And where is that? That's on the day of Hakrovas HaOmer, or the period right before Hakrovas HaOmer, right? And over there, if you're going to pick something while it's Chodesh, what's going to prevent you from popping it into your mouth? I mean, it's always fun. I don't know if you ever did this as a kid, but when you walk through wheat fields, it's always fun to pick a piece of wheat and chew it and something, right? That's in the Malilas and like... What else do you do when you're walking through grain fields? So the question is that over there we seem to find a reversal of the shitas of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, because it says, Atznan, this is a Mishnah, Mi shekarav ha-omer, after the omer was brought, you can immediately go outside and discover all the most delicious things that you thought you were going to have to wait for a couple of days until they're ready, believe it or not. Somebody's made it all ready for you in the Shuke Yerushalayim, and there's all kinds of great stuff. It's full with kemach, it's full with kuli, which is the roasted, the parched grains that have been crushed. And how did you do that? Well, it wasn't right to do. Shalom beretzon chachamim devi Rabbi Meir. This was wrong. Why? Because we're worried that since the people who are processing this are in touch with the new grain, they might come to eat it. And therefore, the Chachamim said, you can't do this. But people would do it anyway, because first guy out, obviously, is the first guy to make money. And it's like on Mitzray Pesach. Some people magically have chometz 3 seconds after Pesach. Wow, what a way to bake bread, right? Anyway, so because of that, the Chachamim were gozer. So there, Reb Yehuda says, no problem. The Chachamim thought this was great. Everybody was able to have immediately the Chodesh grain. So how did we reverse it? Why, by Chometz, is Reb Yehuda the guy who's saying, oh, no, you can't do B'dikah afterwards. You might pop it into your mouth. And here, when it comes to Chodesh, Loko Gazer Reb Yehuda Dilma Ati L'mil Chomunei. Omar Rava, so Rava says the difference is Shinui. When it comes to the Chodesh, the way that you are going to be doing the actual picking is with a shinui. Because the halacha is that mitok shlo yitartelo ela al yedei kituf hu zachur. Since the Torah says that the reshit, it's over here, the reshit ketzir chem el hakohen, the very first of your katzir, of your harvest, has to go to the kohen for the mincha, which is the omer. So how could you have harvested it before? You're not allowed to harvest, right? This has to be erasious. The answer is you don't harvest, because katzir has a specific meaning. It means taking that magal and cutting the grain and so on. But if I just want to go in and pick it up with my hands and fill up baskets with grain, the Torah never asserted that. So because of the very fact that the only way that I would be able to gather this grain was with a shinui, that is served as a very powerful reminder. Hey, you can't eat it. This is unusual stuff. Look how the weird way that you're collecting it. So you're constantly remembering that, whoa, I better not put that in my mouth. So in that case, I don't need to worry. So you'll remember with the shinui. Omale Abaya, look, that's all very nice at the time that you're doing the picking. But I mean, over here, we said that you could find in the Shuk Yerushalayim, you can find flour and so on. How do you make flour, guys? You don't do that with a shinui, do you? I mean, you're making flour, you put it into the grinder, now you got to grind it. So it's all piled up there as you're piling it into the afacheset and so on. How are you doing that? What's going to prevent you from putting it into your mouth? And how are you doing the sifting? Huh? You're going to put the flour in. You got to get rid of all the chaff that's left. How are you going to do that? So why won't you put it into your mouth then? So Ma'ikel Amemra at that point, and that doesn't bother me, says the Gemara. We may have instituted specific shinuyim that you should do in order to avoid eating it. So let's say we will allow you to do the grinding only with a hand grinder, not to use your normal grinder with your animal and so on. And you can only do your sifting if you turn the sieve upside down to make a shinui. Okay, fine. I got a different problem for you, all right? This halacha of not being allowed to do the katsira, and you would have to do it with a shinui, is not always true. The reason that it's not always true is because of the weird way that the pasuk introduces the din of the omer. It says, uktsartem et katsira vehevetem, and then it says, vehevetem reshit katsirchem elakohen. Now, how? I don't understand. If you're katsartem et katsira, you've already done the katsir. So then how are you going to bring the reshit katsirchem el hakohen if you have already done it? Something strange. So therefore, we learn from there that there's two different dinim. Grain that is usable for a carbon mincha, and therefore could be used for the omer, that you cannot harvest normally. That you would have to pick by hand if you're going to pick it at all. And that has to go, the rashis has to go to the kohen. But grain that anyway is not of the highest quality and therefore wouldn't be given for the omer, because we don't bring grain from an ochus that is not of the highest quality, that grain you are allowed to harvest even before the bringing of the omer. So, I mean, that's great. I understand it, but I'm still not allowed to eat it. So how could I harvest it without the built-in shinui? You said the only reason that you're allowing us, Rabbi Yehuda, to do this is because of the fact that there's a shinui and there's no katsira. But over here, the Mishnah says you could even do a katsira on that grain, and apparently there's no problem of popping it into your mouth even without a shinui. Now, that's a problem. So So if this is a field that requires artificial irrigation, then it's not good enough for us to use for menachas in general. Or if this is a field down in the valley, it doesn't get the same amount of sunshine. Also, we do not bring menachas from that grain. So you could do the ktsira, avalo gochin. We don't allow you to do the typical gedisha afterwards to pile it up, to be that it should be gemar malacha and so on. That you can't do, but there's no problem of your doing the ketsira. And over there, the Gemara said, who is the man d'omer that said that that was okay? That is Rabbi Yehuda. So there's no shinui ma'ikel ha'memar. Therefore, Abaya takes a completely different approach to the entire sugya, and Abaya says it is not what Rava said. The issue over here is not that Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to rely on a shinui. The issue is something entirely different. It's called bodil minei. So bodil minei means things that people are used to putting in their minds as being off limits. They may not look different. There may not be any shinui. But the bottom line is, chametz is something that I eat all year round. And there's no way that someone is going to be sensitive all of a sudden to not eating the same piece of cookie that he's been eating 360 days. He's not going to remember. At least not as a natural reaction. So therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, what's going to prevent him from popping it into his mouth? He always pops a cookie into his mouth. On the other, anybody on a diet remembers how difficult it is until you become bodil minei, right? So when it comes to the din of Chodesh, now over there, look, you know, the grain's been out there for a month already before you really have brought the Omer for a couple of weeks. And you are very used to the idea, especially if you're from, you know. So then you need to have a heksher on the Chodesh. Is this Chodesh? Is it Yoshen? You need a big thing on the package that says Yoshen. You walk into the bakery, Yoshen only, and so on. Anyway, so you're very, very attuned to this problem of Chodesh v'Yoshen, which you are certainly not attuned to all year round when it comes to Chometz. And that's the point of Reb Yehuda. We have no raya that Reb Yehuda would rely on a shinui. Maybe he doesn't rely on a shinui ever. But what he does rely on is on Bodil. The Chachomim, on the other hand, they don't believe in Bodil. So for them, we're going to have to find a different solution. And that will take us now into an understanding of all of the various elements that are significant in making a difference between places where we will make a gezeira and not make a gezeira, which end up being significant in the machlokas between Reb Yehuda and the Chachamim here and in many other sugyas. Okay, so that would be the difference. Chodesh bodel minei, chometz lo bodel minei. Says Rava, look, I mean, all of us have been sitting here trying to figure out why Reb Yehuda is not contradicting himself. Why weren't we worried about the Rabbanan contradicting themselves? The Rabbanan ad Rabbanan lokasha? I mean, it was exactly the same problem that we had with the Rabbanan. Why are we only looking at Reb Yehuda? Here the Rabbanan say, don't worry about it. You're not going to pop chametz in your mouth. But over there, when it comes to something that you are bodel minei, namely the Chodesh, there they say, no, you can't do it. It's shelo b'tzon chachamim. I mean, like, you just made things a lot worse, you know, because you explained to us why, according to Reb Yehuda, it's obvious that there's a difference, but the difference is in the wrong direction, according to the chachamim. Why are they more makbid on Chodesh than they would be over here? They said it's shelo b'tzon chachamim. And I don't understand what the issue is. Ella, I'll have to explain to you like this. You're right. I'm accepting your answer, or my answer, Reb Yehuda. I think your answer is probably right, Kiddushanina. But there's no problem with the Rabbanan because we need to note another difference that we haven't taken into consideration. And that is, what are you doing? What you're doing right now is you're mechazer a lovely sorfo. The only thing that you are doing right now is, I am busy looking for chometz so I can burn it. Now, it would be a little bit senile to go looking for chometz so you could burn it to put it into your mouth, wouldn't it? I mean, isn't that a pretty intelligent way of remembering, I don't want to put this in my mouth? I mean, really, have you ever gone searching for a cookie with a flashlight all over the place just so you can eat that stale cookie? No. So what you're doing is, by definition, the best possible memory device. If I'm looking for something that's going to teach me not to do it, I need to look no further than the flickering candle, okay? So therefore, I mean, what's the point? Obviously, he's not going to eat it. He's not that crazy. He doesn't know me. Anyway, Rav Ashi says, I got a different approach. I would say the Reb Yehuda is not a kasha for a completely different reason. What does it say that you found in the Shukei Yerushalayim, huh? All it says that you found was Kemach and Kali. You can't eat raw kemach and kali. But this is ridiculous. I mean, how the Rav Ashi do say, but this is just garbage. Somebody's making a joke. I mean, how did it become kemach v'kali? You know, you didn't exactly pick kemach v'kali. So, ha-tenach v'kali v'elech, fine. But how did you get from picking it to the point where it was kali? Ma'ikalamema. And if you try to give me the old standby answer that Rava gave me, that the way that I picked it was through kitov b'yadayim, fine, you could try answering that, but then when you get to the problem of the Mishnah about taking from fields that aren't usable for menachas, you're going to be stuck. So then what says, Kotzim Beit HaShlachim Shabbat Makim, which we said was like Reb Yehuda, what are you going to say there, Michael Amema? So clearly Reb Ashi is a joke. I mean, forget this. This makes no sense. Okay, now, let us see whether the teretz that we've made now, the difference between bodil and low bodil, does it in fact hold up? Because what you're saying is that when you have something that looks basically the same as it does all year round, so then you're not going to be bodil minei and Reb Yehuda will be gozer. So I got some problems from back in Shabbos. Remember the Mishnah, please mute yourself. Gabai, Gavi. Ah, okay. Don't worry, we were with you. So, if the idea over here is, remember we had the case of the Mishnah, making a little hole in an egg, filling it up with oil, putting it next to the Ner so it could drip in and add a couple of hours additional light. And you can't do this, even if it's shalcheres and it's going to be disgusting. Rabbi Yehuda says there's no problem. What do you mean there's no problem? Oil is oil. No. I'll tell you why not. Because bodil mine, are you or are you not used to the idea of Shabbos? Of course you are. In other words, the very fact that somebody all week long has no hesitation in walking into a room and turning on a light switch does not mean that on Shabbos he walks into a room and turns on the light switch. Why not? Because he's bodil from Shabbos. Doesn't have to be bodil from the thing. This time he is used to making it a very special time in which he remains aware that he's not supposed to do that kind of thing. That's also called bodil. Okay, if you think that's true, how do you explain Rabbi Yehuda in Shabbos proper, where Rabbi Yehuda seems to argue against himself? And by the way, you're going to immediately jump and say, wait a minute, that's not a real question. But that's because you already know the answer. You know that according to Rabbi Yehuda, tying a bow is the equivalent of tying a knot, right? Okay, but remember that each time we get to that point, we have to make sure that we understand that that's the problem. So it says over here, what happens if the rope on your bucket tore on Shabbos? So this actually does say it in the Mishnah. It's a little bit weird why there is a braita like this, but okay, that's a different discussion. So we had that Mishnah before about a chevel, a deletion of sack. The Chachamim say, do not tie it. Just put a bow in it. Rabbi Yehuda says, you can't put a bow in it. All you can do is you can take your belt or you can take your garter belt and you can use that. But you certainly cannot make a bow. So now this everybody's doing the opposite. Here Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says, no, you got to worry because you're not bodil, I guess. And the Rabbanan over here is saying, no, it's okay because you don't have to worry about it. So that I can answer. The Rabbanan I don't have such a real problem with. I'll tell you why. Because remember, according to the Rabbanan, where the issue has nothing to do with bodil, the issue has to do with confusability, right? So is it the same or is it not the same? That's the point according to the Chachamim. And that is called michlaf, not bodil. We've had the idea of shinui. This introduces a new thing. Michlaf, is it possible for me to confuse? And then we've also had, of course, the bodil. So far we have four issues, which is what are you engaged in at the time, which is the Chachamim's explanation of if you're busy looking for it to burn it, how would you put it into your mouth? Fine. All right. So I understand the Rabban is not a problem. Why? Because, look, oil is oil, and that is easily confusable with oil that's in your salad bowl if it's in this egg near your nair. I understand that. Aniva, making a bow, I'm saying you cannot make a knot. You can only make a bow. Now, aniva, bikshira, lo michlaf. That's not something that people confuse. But how do we explain Rabbi Yehuda? I'll tell you. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda also is not a kasha. Because Rabbi Yehuda is not making a gezerah of aniva because of kshira. It's because he holds making a bow is kshira. That's the point. So this has nothing to do with an insight into when Rabbi Yehuda makes a gezerah, for heaven's sakes. So it's Mishum the Kasamra Niva Gufa Kshirahi, as we've seen. Ask the Gemara, but wait a minute, but about this thing over here, isn't there a contradiction in the Rabbanan Gufa because it says, Ditzanan Kosher and Dali Bapaskia Avalo Bechevel, Rabbi Yehuda Matir? So when the Rabbanan say you can tie normally a Dali using a Paskia is like a garter belt. So we don't worry about the fact that you're going to leave it there. You're going to leave it there. And if you don't leave it there, then it's not a Kesher Shel Kayama. So that's not a problem. Don't use a rope. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can even use a rope. Now, what are we talking about? You can even use a rope. What kind of rope? A regular rope? Elaim Bechevel de Alma, a regular rope? Rabbi Yehuda is saying you can use. This is a deraisa. That's ridiculous. That's a Kesher Shel Kayama. Of course he's going to leave it there. And Vade Ati Levituli. How in the world could Rabbi Yehuda be matir that? So obviously what we're talking about is you can use a kind of a rope that will not lead you to leaving it there. What would that be? That would be a rope of a garden. So this is a special rope that is being used by a weaver, which you will not leave there, first of all, because it's not strong enough to be a normal keshedli. Secondly, because you need it for your work, and therefore it's not going to be left there. So that, indeed, is what Rabbi Yehuda is talking about, right? Now, if that's the case, the Rabbanan over here, he's saying, Gozru Rabbanan chevel de gardi otu chevel de alma. Didn't you say that when things are not confusable, according to the Chachamim, that is enough of a reason for us to be matir them? And now you're saying that it's not enough. What's the difference between the Shemen and the Shemen and the Chevel? I don't understand. Yes, says the Gemara. Yes. Chevel b'chevel michlif. Aniva b'kshira lo michlif. Look, to say that I understand clearly the difference between one kind of rope and another kind of rope, no. But that I know that if I have to make a bow, that I cannot make a knot. Every child knows that about Shabbos when he makes a bow in his shoes. I mean, that nobody's going to confuse a bow with a knot. Therefore, we're not going there. But when it comes to using a different type of chevel, we say, no chevel. You got to use your garter belt. Fine. So now the issue is how easily michlaf it is. Okay, then let's get back to Rabbi Yehuda. So again, this would mean that Alib and Rabbi Yehuda, our entire concern is in terms of the idea of bodomine, right? Because, I mean, now let's just go over what exactly we've come out with. We now understand that everything makes perfectly good sense. The Rabbanan will always make a gezerah if it's michlaf, if it's something that I will not recognize as a different thing. So then I will answer it. So when it comes to chodash, yes, I am certainly going to worry about you popping in the mouth. The idea of using the chevel, yes, they're over there, fine. I'd have to worry. But chometz, I don't have to worry. That's because of the new halacha, that you're being mahader to get rid of it. And therefore, we have a reason for us to stand off. So the Rabbanan hold, either if there's no reason to confuse, or even if there's a reason to confuse, but there is another reason to prevent that confusion, then fine. The difference between Aniva and Kshira, that we hold is obvious. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't buy into any of that. I say we do make a gezerah, and I don't give a hang about all these other things. If something is bodomine, no gezerah. If something is lo bodomine, yes gezerah. That's what I say. So therefore, chodash, I say, is bodil. Shabbos is bodil. The issue of the aniva has nothing to do with it because it's not a gezerah. It is the equivalent of kshira. So everything makes sense. All of the differences that we've seen are explained by the differences in how much we are concentrating on the idea of bedila and how much we're concentrating on the idea of shinoi or atila michlaf. Okay, so now everything makes sense. The only problem is that we do seem to have places where it doesn't hold up in Rabbi Yehuda, because we know that there are places where Rabbi Yehuda actually has a reason to be gozer, and we say, B'chor sh'achasol dam, afilu hu meit, ein mekizin lo dam, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Now, a b'chor is something, you have an animal that's a b'chor, it is, like anything else, very bodomine, because it's hegdish. Remember, one of the main things that we've said until now, remember we had the din of the mechitza before? You do not have to make a mechitza in front of hegdish if it's chometz, because all year round you're very careful not to touch chometz. Okay, so then the same thing should be true over here. And if I am actually talking about this bechor, then we should certainly say, Alib and Rabbi Yehuda, that you're bonomine, right? And yet, we don't. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, you cannot do anything, even if you're very careful. Your bechor is about to drop dead. It is suffering from extremely high blood pressure. Achazod dam. The only thing that you can do to save its life is to let blood from it. But There's no issur in letting blood, but there's always the chance that you might make a mum. So if you're not careful where it is that you're going to puncture a vein, you may end up doing it in a place that causes a mum and won't be able to heal over, and then you'll be over on an issur d'oraisa, putting a mum b'katya. So Rabbi Yehuda is the one who should say, well, it's not a problem because you're very careful about not making a mistake when it comes to kachim, and yet it says the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda says there's nothing you can do. Even if it's going to drop dead, you're stuck. The Chachamim say, no, just be careful. Yakiz uvavad shelo yatu b'umom. Now there we've got yet some other issue that is overriding the Badomine. What is that issue that's overriding the Badomine? Ah, it says the Gemara. That's awesome. Adam bohul al mamono. There, it's because you may lose control. This was a concept that we saw by Shabbos many times. If you're in a position in which you are likely to, let's remember we had the case of the fire, and the question is how much you can save from the fire. So over there also, we were worried that there's a problem over there of losing control because, oh my God, everything I have is about. So the Chachamim specifically put it into a way that you wouldn't. Over here, we're worried. And I'm reading Yisharita, like once you tell him, yeah, go ahead and get rid of that extra blood, then if you allow him, b'makom she'eino osim bo mum, osim l'mevad b'makom she'osim bo mum. And according to the Rabbana, they say even that is not a problem because it's the contrary. Did we not see by Hilchos Shabbos that what we do is we give you a controlled outlet, but we don't stop you from having an outlet because then it's even worse. Because then the kol shekein, if you're not going to allow him, lo sharita leklal, then he may actually lose total control and not even try to be makpid on where it is that he's doing this bloodletting. Okay. So now we've introduced a new issue. Bohul, shinui, michlaf, bodil, and all of the questions that we had before. Excellent. Ask the Gemara, but wait, does Rabbi Yehuda actually believe that Adam Bohol al Mamono means that we have to be gozer? Didn't Rabbi Yehuda say that the halacha is that ein mikardin et habeima b'yomtov b'pnei shu oseh b'chabura? So this is called currying, which you do with a very stiff brush, with metal, metal teeth. And over there, we're afraid that what you may well do is press so hard when you curry. Remember that currying is, people do this with their dogs as well, obviously, where you've got an animal that's got mud and dirt in the animal's coat. So then you've got to get rid of all of that because it's extremely uncomfortable and unpleasant. And so you take this brush, and you can buy these in any supermarkets. You can see a currying brush. It's got these metal teeth, and it can actually cause a cut in the skin if you press too hard, because they're very sharp teeth. So I must admit, I have actually in the past made it a habit to always buy curing brushes because there's nothing else that can cur- I can do it with my beard. So I always go to the dog section. It's crazy. Yeah, this was years ago. All right. So anyway, you can't do that on Shabbos because you may make a chabura. And what you could do, mikartzefin, you could use a regular kind of brush, which is that has wider, like made out of wood maybe, you know, and it's got these much duller kinds of teeth in it. And over there, you're not going to make a chabura. So apparently, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're not worried that because of the fact that it's so important for you to get all that mud out of your dog's coat and the dog is so uncomfortable, we're not going to make a gezeira that if we allow you to do the kirtzo, if you're going to do the kidur, and the Chachomim Dafka, the ones who say, no, you can't do either. Ein mekadrin af ein mekartzefim. And we explain, what is that? Tanyezu kidur ezu kirtzuf. Kidur is ktanim. They're very thin, sharp teeth, and they make chabura. And kirtzuf is very dull teeth. It's gdolim, like these wooden combs that you can buy. and they do not make a bechabura. So says the Gemara, I don't understand what your question is. I mean, are you really comparing getting your dog's fur clean to the behemoth dying? I mean, come on, you've got to be a real dog lover to be bohul on the fact that your dog doesn't like, or you don't like your dog looking muddy. It's not the same as adam bohla mamono. Over there, if in a case where ishavikle mayas, if it's going to die, so then yes, adam bohla mamono. But over here, what's the big deal? So it's got a muddy coat? Ishavikle tsarabiyamu. Over there, it's just painful, or uncomfortable, or less. I mean, lo amrin adam bohla mamono. So how come Rabbi Yehuda is gozer by chometz, and kirtzuf is not gozer? That's because Rabbi Yehuda agrees. Now, this is the first time that we have seen this, that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to one of the issues that the Chachamim have mentioned, michlaf. So lechem belechem is michlaf. It's very easy to simply not note the difference between something that is chometz and something that's matzah. It could look exactly the same. Kidur Bekirtsov does not look exactly the same. And that, Rabbi Yehuda is made, is an additional factor, which we didn't know up until this moment, besides the question of Bodomine. Okay, so this brings us up now to the next sugya. And it also brings us up to our dear Capitan. Thank you, Helika Talisker. So, the question in the next Mishnah is, when exactly is the time for biur? How long can you eat the chometz? When do you start doing the burning of the chometz? And this represents the transition between the first part of the perek, which is about bedikas chometz, and the second part of the perek, which is about the biur chometz and the yisurim of eating chometz during Yud Dalet. The next perek will move on to when are all of the yisurim of chometz, and how do they continue on from that point. So this is really, we're getting to the point, we're going to transition soon into the next perek, and now we want to know on the 14th, at what point do you do the sreifa? So Rabbi Meir says, well, ochlin kol chamesh, sorfim b'tchilat shesh. You can eat the entire fifth hour, and 1 hour before the D'oraisa Isser of the chametz, that is when the Rabbanan said, you can no longer eat it, and you can no longer be nene from it. There's no interim period. At that point, it becomes usser, both b'achila and b'hanah, and therefore it's time to burn it because you can't do anything else with it. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we're worried to allow you to eat all the way up to the sixth hour. You might get confused. You can eat it all through the fourth hour. The next hour you have to be nene from it. So at that point, you could sell it to a goy, feed it to your animal. You just can't eat it yourself. So that's called tolin kol chamesh. Now, the language of tolin is difficult, and the Rambam understands, we'll talk tomorrow, about the tolin having to do with hegdesh or truma. And that is, we always do call that tolin, lo ochlim velo sorfim. So you are, but here what it means is, as a general term, you are still allowed to be nene. And then you need to burn it betchilat shesh. And another thing that Rabbi Yehuda mentioned was that what I'm telling you was part of the whole minhag at the time of the Beis HaMikdash. There used to be two chalot todah. Out of the 40 chalot todah, there would be put two chalot of todah, which were psulas. The Gemara is going to ask, how did they become psulas? But we certainly don't want to put normal chalos of todah up on a roof to get ruined. So we took two chalos psulas, we put it on top of the itztaba. Remember, the itztaba was the stadium seating that surrounded the area of the Beis HaMikdash, the chutz of the Beis HaMikdash. So kozman shemunachot, as long as you could see this from far away. So as long as both of the chalot were there, everybody eats. When you take one, you have to stop eating, but you know that you have that time while there's one up there that is mutar bano, you could sell it to goyim, and you don't burn your chametz yet. Nitlu shteihem, when they're both gone, now it is time that you've got 1 hour left. That time is the time that you do your sreifa. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Rabbi Gamliel says, well, it's not quite that way. When it comes to chulin, yes, it is that way. But when it comes to truma, we don't want you to burn your truma and not have enough time to finish it. So we give you, for truma, an extra hour to eat even during the fifth hour in order to make certain that the truma will be finished. And then you burn everything else, betchilat sheish. Tzanahat. Echad omer b'shnayim b'chodesh. Echad omer b'shlosha. Now, the question over here is that since we are concerned that people are going to get confused, how confused do people get? So obviously the machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda has to revolve around that issue. How confused do people get? Would they really confuse the third hour, the fourth hour? Are they going to confuse with a time that's 2 hours later? Will they confuse it only with a 1 hour mistake? We'll talk about exactly what the mistakes are, but Rabbi Yehuda is saying there's an additional hour that we need to take into consideration where someone might think that if we allow him to eat in a fifth hour, he's going to actually eat in a seventh hour. I mean, is that really a concern? So let's take a look in Sanhedrin, where we've got to talk about the question of whether Edim are contradicting each other. If they're contradicting each other, then that Edus is an Edus Mukheshet. You cannot accept it. If they're not contradicting each other, they may be a little off because their watches may be a little off. You know, their sensitivity to time may be different, but that's within the range of reasonable error, and we would not view that as Edus Mukheshet. So it's important for us to take a look at the dinim of Edus and then see how it would apply here to our sugya. So in the Mishnah there in Sanhedrin, it says, look, if one eight says it was the second of the month, and one eight said it was the third of the month, that is not considered to be an Edus Mukheshet because that is a normal human error. One of them knows about Rosh Chodesh being earlier and one of them doesn't. That can happen at any time to anyone. So for sure, that is not going to make the nafkamina to me. Okay. If one of them would say Shlosha and one of them would say Chamisha, then the Edus is Batal. Because we don't believe. That's got to be a lie. We don't believe that people are going to make that kind of mistake of 2 days. By the time a day had passed, he undoubtedly would have known when is the real time for the Rosh Chodesh. Found out. Now, how about if one of them said it took place in the second hour of the day, so 2 o'clock. One of them says 3 o'clock. That's also okay. But if one of them says 3 o'clock and one of them says 5 o'clock, that is too much of an error. And that, Rabbi Meir says, is considered to be Edut Mukheshet. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you could have that kind of mistake. But if one of them says 5 o'clock and one of them says 7 o'clock, then for sure it's a Hakrasha. Because, how do you mix up 5 o'clock? Remember, 5 o'clock means the fifth hour. You're entering into the sixth hour of the day. It's still morning. How do you confuse that with 7 o'clock, which is meaning the beginning of the afternoon? It's the first hour in the afternoon. And it's obvious what direction the shadows are falling. For God's sake, you can't confuse the afternoon with the morning, can you? And therefore, in that case, for sure, the Edus is Betela. Omar Abaya, look, if you really look into this, says Abaya, what it boils down to is this. Kishitim Salomar, according to Rabbi Meir, we're not really allowing any kind of error. There's no margin of error. All that we're doing is interpreting what they're saying so that it boils down to the same thing. That's what I think is going on. So according to Rabbi Meir, we don't allow for error. Ein adam toev lo klum. And even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who you think is saying we're making a mistake of 2 hours, nonsense. All that Rabbi Yehuda is saying is you can make an acceptable error of a half an hour. Okay, let me explain to you why I'm saying that. L'divrei Rabbi Meir in Adam Tov Lo Klum, because I can say the event actually took place at the instant of the transition between the second hour and the beginning of the third hour. Now, one of these people were talking about the very end when he said Shtayim. And the other one was talking about very beginning, and they're talking about the same event at the same moment. There is no error. Now, obviously, this is weird, and the Gemara is going to attack it. The reason that it's weird is because why don't we find out? I understand. We should take the Adim and say, now, when you said that, did you mean it was the beginning of the second hour or the end of the second hour? Did you mean the beginning of the third hour? This the Gemara is going to ask, and we'll get into that tomorrow. But right now, there definitely are ways that we can justify saying that the event is the same event and the hour referred to is the same hour being referred to in different ways. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you can only maximally be acceptable error of a half an hour. And how is that? That would be Adam Torah Chatzi Sha'ah, because let's assume that the actual event takes place at half of the fourth hour, right? So the one that says 3, let's call that 4:30, even though it means 3:30. So the Ipalga de Arba, so maybe the event took place at 4:30. The guy who said 3 meant the very end of 3, which is 4, and therefore he was making a mistake of a half an hour, and he's making a mistake in going back, and the one that said it was 5, he made a mistake going forward, and he really meant the very end. The Bitchilat Chamesh, which is basically a half an hour later. And that's the difference. Or others put it a little differently. It's not correct to say there's no error except the half an hour. Or according to Rabbi Meir, there's no error at all. We don't refer to the same moment as being the end of the second hour and the beginning of the third hour. There needs to be an element of error that would be, let us say, 1 minute. Or a half a minute. There's something extra. So therefore, the way, correct way to say what Abai was saying was, Kishatim Salomar, when you get to the bottom line, you will find that according to Rabbi Meir, your maximum error is just a tiny bit, maybe a minute, maybe less than a minute. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a tiny bit more than the Adam. The Rabbi Yehuda Adam To'eh, Sha'av Mashu, could be a little bit more than an hour. So according to this version, Rabbi Meir, Adam Toe Mashu, because the Maisa was either at the end of Shtaim or Betchilat Shalosh, which is a difference of 1 minute, and one of them is mistaken in one direction. Chad Minayu Toe Mashu. L'divi Rabbi Yehuda, what we say in this version of Abaye, is that the Adam is Toe a Sha'av Mashu, because the Maisa could have taken place either at the end of the third hour, or at the beginning of the fifth hour, which is an hour and 1 minute apart. And therefore, the person has a right to make that mistake of an hour or slightly more than an hour. We'll take a look at why this makes any sense, and it isn't just making assumptions, which when you're dealing with testimony, you have no right to make such assumptions. That we will talk about tomorrow. We'll also, Bezrat Hashem, do the review of the Perek up until this point, where we've got 10 very yummy dafim to go over that are very well structured if we take a look at it with our perspective from beginning to end.